Welcome to Breakthrough Barriers with Damali. I'm your host, Damali Peterman. On this podcast, we invite you to share a conflict that you need help navigating, and I, along with a guest co-host, will share what we would do in that situation to help you reach your breakthrough. Welcome to the show.
On today's episode, I have James Napal Singh with me, all the way from across the pond. Well, originally from across the pond, but actually, where are you right now, James?
I'm in Japan right now, Damali.
Excellent. He's actually in Japan right now. And we're going to learn a lot more about James. I always like to start the episode with a little bit of information about how I met my co-host. James and I met actually over one of the world's best networking platforms, LinkedIn. And James, do you want to tell everyone what made you reach out to me?
Yeah, so I'm a bit obsessed with podcasts, and I usually listen to them before I go to sleep because it helps me sleep. And I heard one of your podcasts, and it particularly resonated with me because I thought I was the only lawyer who had a lot of extracurricular activities that were not in any way related to law. But it felt so good to find out that there was another kindred spirit. So I had to reach out to you to say thank you for letting me know that there's someone else out there who's just like me.
And it was fantastic. I mean, I really loved hearing that, you know, we do have a lot of things in common. And I was, you know, probably as blown away as you were. But now I'm a little bit concerned if listening to my podcast made you go to sleep.
It took a while to sleep. No, it wasn't the first 5 minutes, believe me.
So, James, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, my parents are from Trinidad, and I was born and raised in England. As Trinidad's a really mixed race country, my heritage is very mixed as well. So it's Black, Caribbean, Indian, South American, some French in there as well. So in Trinidad, I'm what's known as the Kalaloo boy. So if you know food in Trinidad, it's like a mix of different kind of vegetables and fruits and things. My dad described me as a pioneer, which made me laugh the other day. So I went to Oxford University, and when I went in, I was the only Black student who did English literature in that year out of about 300 students. And in my intake of undergraduates, there are about 3,000 students. And I had a guess to say there were about 18 Black students, and I was one of them. And after that, I got a training contract at a Magic Circle law firm, and I still work at that firm. And I've worked in their London office, the Middle East, and also Tokyo, which is where I'm now. My extracurricular activities, this is where I resonate with you. I'm a DJ. In the lockdown, I just got really frustrated with the lack of diversity in the music. So I created my own music. I became a producer. I started my own record label. And now the biggest DJs in the world are playing my music, which is awesome. I'm an executive coach, so I'm trained and accredited as a coach. I'm a qualified personal trainer, and I've just started to get into art as well. So, so like you, there's a lot more to just a lawyer.
That's phenomenal. And so I love that you appear to be what we call in the U.S. a jack of all trades. that it sounds like you don't do anything halfway, which I really enjoy. If you're going to DJ, you're going to have the biggest DJs in the world playing your tracks. You know, you're going to get into coaching, but you became a qualified executive coach and a qualified personal trainer. And it sounds like there's also a new foray into art. And I think you mentioned that you had a few exhibitions going on. Is that right?
Yeah. So I had one in London, and I've got a couple in Tokyo now, but you really hit the nail on the head. So when I do stuff, I like to go really into it. It sounds like you're quite similar. So I get quite obsessed with it, and just the mediocrity doesn't really satisfy me. I really want to get to the highest level. So like you said, I really want the biggest DJs in the world playing my music. And I did that within the space of 3 months. This is quite a good thing when I'm really passionate about it, I really get into it. And I always want to go to the top level there.
Well, that definitely resonates with me. I really enjoy doing something. And I agree with you. I couldn't have said it better. Mediocrity just doesn't work. Either you're going to excel, or why do it at all? I also want to make sure, because I know what a Magic Circle firm is, but for those listeners who may not be familiar with that phrase, can you tell us what Magic Circle means?
There are five law firms that originated in London, and they're often described in the press as being the most prestigious. The firm that I work for is one of the oldest law firms in the world, and it's got one of the best reputations out of all the multinational law firms. And because of that, it is extremely competitive to actually win a place to work at the firm.
That's excellent. So I'm so excited to have you on the show. I can hear that you are quite busy. And so I want to make sure that we dive into some of the things that are coming up right now, both globally and also for our listeners. Now, typically, for any of you who have heard our podcast before, you know we usually take calls and we play recordings of people who are asking for advice. Perhaps there is an issue or conflict that they're navigating and they want to hear some input from someone who's had that experience or an expert in the field. And that has been a really great model and we really enjoy it. What I've also been getting has been a lot of questions that have been emailed to me. And some of those questions have kind of led me to, for this season, to focus a little bit more on picking up what's happening in the world. And for someone who's listening to this, perhaps out of order of the other podcasts, or perhaps for the first time, what's happening globally is we're seeing a lot of movement that are focusing on things like racial equality, thinking about inequities and how to resolve them. There are words that are being used like how to be an ally. There are words that are being used that are focusing on ways to truly level the playing field and make everyone feel that they have a space and a place at the table. And so one of the things that I want to focus on for this podcast with you, James, is some of those questions that I'm getting and it's kind of steering that into a conversation about negotiations, because to me, negotiations occur every day in a variety of settings. It could be a negotiation that you're having with a child about screen time. It could be a negotiation that you're having at a dealership if you're trying to purchase a car. It could be a negotiation that you're having in a professional setting as a lawyer or as a negotiator or mediator. Or it could just be a conversation that you're having with someone and you're trying to decide what to say and what not to say. And so one of the questions that come up a lot that I've been receiving is there a difference? Is there something that people of color encounter when they're negotiating? And so I'll ask you that question first. Do you think, in your experience, right, that negotiators of color have other things on their mind, meaning, you know, they it's more than just whatever the deal is or whatever the deal terms are. There's more going on for a person of color who's negotiating.
That's a really interesting question. And the thing that really sticks out for me when I hear that was an experience I had when I was in my final year at university. The civil service in England put on a course for black people and people of color to give them preparation for things like interviews. And in my interview, I was interviewed by a black woman. And at the end of it, when she was giving me feedback, she said, James, you need to be really careful. And I got really confused. I was saying, why? She said, you might come across as being too aggressive. And I was like, but I'm just so passive. How can I be aggressive? She said, look, the people who you're interviewing with probably have not had face-to-face contact with black people. And if you're coming across as a smart person who might even be more intelligent than them and making better points than them, they might see you as a threat. So you need to make sure the tone that you're saying your argument in is kind of modified for your audience. And that really hit me because I never saw myself as being that kind of person or people viewing me as being a black person or a threat just because of the way I'm talking. Because the way I was trained, you argue a point and you argue it well, but I never really contextualize it within the race realm. So ever since that day, I've been really careful about how I phrase things and who I phrase them with. That's the first point. The second point, I think if you're a black person or person of color, in my experience, you can assess the room that you're in and how to almost be a chameleon in that room, so you can change different cultures. So my parents are from the West Indies, they've got West Indian friends. I don't know if your parents are quite similar, but my parents changed the way they talk in the house and outside. Because outside the house, people would understand the patois that they speak. So at an early age, I've been attuned to those kind of differences. And because of that, I just feel like I could go anywhere in the world or any room and assess the situation, kind of modify my behavior, the way I speak, or just the general vibe of the room, how to, the energy, for example. I know how to attune myself to that.
That's excellent, James. So what I'm hearing you say is that in the first instance, you were preparing, when you were at university, you're preparing for different arguments. And one of the kind of resonating and valuable tips of feedback that you received was that you should be careful with your tone, because the combination or the intersectionality of you being, you know, a person of color and a debater or a negotiator could have a different impact on the people who are listening to you. Because what I heard you say is that, you know, like, you never thought about it from your perspective as a presenter. And then it's something that people could perceive in a different way, because that's how they are sort of processing the information. And I want you to know that that's something that I have been told too. And that I think is something that a lot of people have been told who are people of color, that they can't just be the best. They have to also think about ways to fit into a dominant structure that, you know, can sometimes perceive different character traits as being aggressive or too assertive. And so I'm so happy that you said that, because to me, a lot of people provide that advice and they try to have you fit into this one size fits all kind of presentation or negotiation strategy. And I submit to you that I don't think that works. I think we have to lean into the obvious differences, because if we have to monitor our tone and shrink ourselves in order to fit in or to not be seen as, you know, or to not be seen as aggressive, then we aren't really showing up as our true selves. What do you think about that?
I think that's so true. And I the thing that really annoyed me when I heard that statement, I know it's true, that's why I tone myself down. But if I was white and I did the same thing, you said the word, I'd be known as assertive. So why should I have to limit my words, my tone, which is, like you said, my authentic self, just to appease someone else, to change their opinion of a wrong opinion that's of me? So I think the challenge that people of color, black people, I go through every single day is, how do you bring your authentic self to the table whilst not being a threat at the same time? And I have to admit, I still struggle with that today.
Well, tell me something. You know, you're many years out of uni and you have, you know, worked at Magic Circle firm. You've had so many amazing experiences, some of which we'll get into a little bit later on this show. But what would you tell yourself, the same person that was talking to this advisor who told you to watch your tone? What would you say to yourself today? What advice would you give yourself today?
That's such a difficult question to answer. I really want to say to myself, be your authentic self. But if I knew that at that time, I probably wouldn't be where I am now. Because when I was a trainee, it was a long time ago, the culture was very different. It wasn't as open now. We couldn't say things, because if you spoke out, it would be fear if you wouldn't get promoted or you'd be seen as too militant. So I think I toned it quite well at the time. So I think at that time I toned it in a quite almost passive, silent kind of mode. So I didn't want to stick out too much. And the higher I got, I had more of a voice, and I let that shine through. And I think that suited the times well. So I'd say to myself, actually, you did quite well, James. But if my person back then was living now, I'd say definitely you can speak up. You can say a lot more. If you see injustices, you should definitely shout out, because you do have a voice that will be listened to. But as I said, times have changed. And I'm really thankful for the people that have actually helped my career, who've let me know that I could actually say what I really want to say and speak my mind. And I am where I am because of the qualities I bring to the table. It's not because I'm a charity case or I'm deaf to ease the quotas or anything else like that. So my voice is there and you can actually be your authentic self. So it's a really long-winded way of saying I think it is easier to be your authentic self as a person of color or black person nowadays than it was back then.
Excellent. And I also heard you say that, you know, you earned your seat at the table, but it also sounds like you're saying there's a time and a place, right? And so maybe in order to sort of arrive to the space or the place where you feel like you can really speak your mind and be listened to, it's kind of like that path, right? Like you have to crawl before you can walk. And what that made me think of is something that a conversation I was having a few days ago with someone, and they were talking about Beyonce. And that's because you're a DJ, I think you can appreciate me bringing Beyonce up in this conversation. But what I heard them say was something that really changed the way that I thought about Beyonce's sort of progression. You know, she was with a group before, she went out on her solo career, and she basically became very beloved by a lot of different people, cultures. I think her fans call themselves a part of the Beehive for Beyonce. And then in the recent, if you look at her recent work, you know, to quote the person I was talking to, it's blackety black, black, black. And so, you know, she just came out with that video, the visual album. It's called Black is King. I think on Juneteenth, which is the date that I think that all the slaves in the U.S. realized that they were free, was June 19th. It wasn't when everyone else thought about it, you know, July 4th, what, 1776, but it was actually, you know, sometime later that the word spread and everyone was actually free in the U.S. And so I think on Juneteenth, when everyone was still kind of in quarantine and sort of figuring out what was happening, she released a new song on that day too, focusing on Black excellence. And so the point is, you know, as I'm relating that to what you're saying, is that she kind of walked the path. She did the things that people, that resonated with a large group of people. She became very well regarded, highly respected. Her music is amazing by many standards. You know, she's a hard worker. No one can deny that she's a hard worker. If you've seen any of her, you know, any of her videos, she works very hard. She does a lot. And then now, where her messaging is kind of focusing on probably something that would have really pigeonholed her in the beginning if that was how she started off. And so someone was having this conversation with me a few days ago, and I said, wow, you know, I never really thought about it from that perspective, but I can see how a particular path can lead you to being, you know, coming more into yourself as you're growing into yourself. And I also liked hearing you say that you've had a lot of great people in your corner, great people that you've worked with that support you, that you are not a charity case, which is one of those other things that we have to debunk a lot when you're a person of color, that you deserve to be at the table.
It's so interesting what you're saying about Beyonce, because I think the perceptions of her have changed, but in Beyonce's mind, she's still Beyonce. She's always been black. It's just that she's showing the blackness now. And I think that's kind of shocking people. And I had something quite similar, actually, because our firm's got the Black Affinity Network, and I went on this global conference we have, which was fantastic. It's just really empowering to be around all the black lawyers in the local network. And when I came back, I debriefed my team about it. And they're actually asking about my experience about being black and what it's like being black and what it's like being black in the firm. And for me, it felt like I was almost coming out, because it was a different side of my character that they never actually really thought about or contemplated. But like you say, it's, you choose what to show in the workplace, and unless the actual momentum comes up, you don't, that really doesn't happen. And I think that's happening now for Beyonce, that she feels very comfortable doing that, and the climate's right to do that, and it's fantastic. And to the credit of my firm as well, those conversations are happening now, so a lot of deep conversations are happening, and there is a lot of momentum to change things, because they know things do actually need to change. So the current climate is obviously very challenging globally, but within corporate cultures and within law firms, I think a lot of positive change is happening at the moment.
Absolutely. And I think how you show up is so important too. You mentioned that, you know, your parents, who of course are very influential in your life, there would be, you know, that level of comfort that they felt at home where they can speak in Patois. And then outside of the home, they would find, you know, they would adapt to their environment. And so what I want to talk about now is kind of shifting the conversation to how that works in negotiations, kind of that code switching, if you will, where you're comfortable doing something in one setting and you kind of switch it for a different setting. And so at the negotiation table, sometimes the foundation of that of where it's coming from, the foundation of, you know, thinking about how do I want to be at the table? Do I want to mirror what I'm seeing, what I'm receiving? Do I want to trust my instincts, or do I want to just kind of stay on the script of what I've been taught and focus on that? And so I know that's a lot of different things coming at you in this question, but I want to ask you about, you know, a recent negotiation, and to tell me something that you realized that you learned that you want to kind of use as a learning tool or teaching tool rather for our listeners at the negotiation table, to prepare them for the negotiation table.
So I studied English literature at university before I went to law school. So I love theatre and I love drama. So if I go into negotiation before the very first negotiation, I ask the client, what role do you want me to play? So the recent negotiation that I'm in now, I actually had a 3-hour conference call today on the same thing. The client wanted me to act as the bad cop, to be really difficult and really probing. And they wanted to come in as really collaborative and like trying to appease things and make the peace. So I took on that role. And as I said before, I'm a qualified and an accredited executive coach. So I've been trained how to listen. And I've been trained to know when people are hiding things. And I sensed with the people I was negotiating that they weren't really saying everything that there was to say. And it's quite difficult because we're recording this in lockdown and we did this negotiation via Skype business meeting. So I couldn't see the body language to know for sure, but I could hear changes in tone. I could notice pauses. The energy levels of the actual conversation were very different. So in a situation like that, I just paused and said, I have a sense that something's not being said here. Is there an elephant in the room that you'd like to share with us now? And that just, there was silence for about 30 seconds. And then it all came out after that. But that's because I've been trained to know how to do that. And I know how to actually ask the right questions. But it's interesting you related that to my parents and the patois and the cultural chameleon kind of stuff, because you learn different characters when you're in those kind of roles and seeing different cultures as well, because you see how people react in different situations. And I think that makes you more attuned to things which aren't the normal kind of status quo. So you know when things aren't right in conversations or meetings. I don't know if you've had similar experiences. I don't really know if that makes sense as well, because it's more about intuition and feelings. It's not really something you can pinpoint in language.
Oh, that's exactly what I was thinking about. And you really hit the nail on the head. I had to slow down because I oftentimes get sayings completely wrong. I obliterate them, but I think I got that right. You hit the nail on the head. And so basically, you know, what I'm taking away as tips for our audience, for our negotiators who are sitting there with a pen and paper to write this down, is trust your instincts. I've read a lot of negotiation books. I've taken negotiation courses and I've negotiated professionally for almost 20 years. And largely the advice that you hear in the books and in the courses, they really want you to not trust your instincts. They want you to not kind of say, okay, something's going on, I feel something, but don't have a gut reaction. And you'll see that in most negotiation books. I think that you have to trust your instincts. You have to lean into it. And in the example that you provided, you thought that there was something more to be uncovered. And instead of changing the topic and the subject, you leaned in and used your executive coach training. You asked an open-ended question, and then you waited. And you said there was silence for about 30 seconds. And silence is another tip that it's so essential in communication. Mm. You told me that you live in Japan. Japan is known in a communications lingo as being more of a high context communication culture, whereas the US or London is more of a low context. So you learn a lot of things from context, and then you learn a lot of things from what's not being said. So people in a, you know, in a, people are telling you, and I totally could have butchered that, but I think I got it right. But the point is that, you know, some people, you don't have to worry about the context. They'll tell you everything you need to know. Whereas mm-hmm. others, you have to kind of glean from the context, you know, what they want to communicate and what their intentions and interests are. And so what I love about what you did is by using silence, you first allow the person to think about the question that you asked. It wasn't a leading mm-hmm. question. It was an open-ended question. And then they spilled the beans. Then they shared information that you otherwise wouldn't have received if you ignored that feeling, that instinct that told you that there was something more there. And so I think those are a few great tips for our listeners. One, again, as I always say, trust your instincts. Two, ask an open-ended question. So lean into whatever it is. Maybe you can't pinpoint what it is. Maybe you don't know what the issue is, but you know that something's off. So instead of avoiding it, leaning into it. Then three, asking that open-ended question. And then four, be quiet. Give them an opportunity to answer. And even if people are silent for 30 seconds or a minute, usually in most cultures that don't rely on context, people are uncomfortable with silence and they will fill the silence with words. What do you think, James?
Like you say, Damali, silence is such a powerful tool, and it was actually one of the hardest things to learn in the training to be an executive coach, because it makes people feel very uncomfortable. And I personally found it very difficult to be comfortable in the silence. But if you use it as a tool, you find that when you make people feel uncomfortable, they let out a lot more than if you didn't use silence in the first place. So I always use it.
No, that's excellent. So what I want to do, James, is I want to ask you for any sort of parting ideas or tips for negotiators of color.
I think you should not see your cultural background or the color of your skin as an impediment that you have to hide to conform. You should see it as an empowering tool to actually progress and advance yourself above others, because you have something unique that other people don't have. And you should definitely embrace that and take that forward with your career and treat it as an actual asset that it truly is.
Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. And so, basically, that is everything that I wanted to cover with you today. I am so delighted to have you on the show. It's been quite a pleasure just learning more about you. And there's so much more. I wish we had 15 hours to kind of dive into your amazing resume and to talk about some of your successes, both at and away from the negotiation table. And I suspect that our guests will love it and we'll have to have you back on the show. But for now, I just want to thank you so much, James, for joining us today. I want to thank the audience for tuning in. And I am your host, Damali Peterman. And this is Breakthrough Barriers with Damali. Continue to break through and have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Do you have any barriers that we can help you break through? If so, you can leave a brief message at 646-363-6322 or on our interactive blog at www.breakthroughadr.com. Please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at the @BREAKTHROUGH D R. I'm your host, Damali Peterman, and this is Breakthrough Barriers with Damali. Although I am a lawyer, mediator, and an educator, and many of my co-hosts will represent various professions, we want to be clear that we are not providing legal advice, counseling, or suggestions. Our goal is to provide a roadmap for conflict resolution to generate future conflict resolvers. Continue to break through and have a wonderful day.